Good day, everyone. This is Thursday, October 10th, 2013, and we have the Ontology-Based Standards mini-series session 4 today. I am Peter Yim from Ontolog, and I'm supposed to be co-chairing today's session with Dr. Ram Sriram from the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology. Unfortunately, the U.S. government shut down since October 1st, so Ram will not be with us along with other U.S. government colleagues. So I will have to run the agenda, which actually was jointly prepared by Ram and myself, of course, before the government shut down. And so here we are. The topic for today is the case for a quantities and units of measure ontology standard. So if people would move to slide number 2, let me first explain what the ontology-based standards initiative and the mini-series is. The ontology-based standards initiative is a joint initiative of OASIS, OMG, various ISO working groups, IAOA, OOR, and Ontolog. And it's a collaborative effort co-organized by these groups to drive ontology-based standards, drive that agenda among the, of course, the standards development community, the ontology community, and also the systems community. This is inspired by Ontology Summit 2009, when we had the theme getting toward ontology-based standards during that year. That summit was chaired by Steve Ray, who is also with us today. And the mini-series started late last year in October, and we kicked off with a couple of sessions then. And 2 or 3 months ago, we convened the community in a brainstorm session again, and 8 new sessions were proposed by the community. And of course, that brainstorm session made up the 3rd in the series. So what we have today is the 4th in the mini series and the 1st of these 8 sessions. Between now and the rest of the year, we will only be able to roll out 4 of these sessions, and the rest will be scheduled after Ontology Summit 2014, probably in the April or May timeframe next year. Going to slide number 3, there has been a huge effort in the community on units of measure. So, of course, out of Ontology Summit 2009, 9 different projects were identified, which would be very meaningful in creating a units of measure ontology standards was among one of them. The project was incubated by the Ontolog community for about 6 months, and the project was to coordinate, this incubation project was to coordinate and develop a draft of an OWL and CLIF-based international standards for units of measure and quantities that could be publicly available and free of charge to everyone. Vigorous online discourse and 7 virtual panels were featured, and a survey, very thorough survey of the landscape on various UOM standardization activities and some research activities was made. And most of the principals from those efforts were engaged during those 7 sessions as well. Of course, that project is formally retired from Ontolock because Ontolock is not isn't a standards development organization, but it is moved over by choice to OASIS, and the OASIS COMOS TC was thus formed from that incubation work. I included a couple of links on the Ontolock workspace that captured the work that was done during that time. Moving on to slide number four, what are we trying to achieve today? First of all, we hope we can bring together stakeholders of the quantities and units of measure standards. The COMOS TC actually ran into some impasse because we were not able to engage people who were really stewards of measurement standards and units of measure, namely the metrology people, BIPM, people who created the SI standards and so on. And very much so, we want to engage them. And it was Ron's intent actually to leverage today's session to engage them, which unfortunately isn't happening, but we're not, we will revisit this point again. And of course, we will take the opportunity to share information on key recent developments, in particular, Ralph Hodgson from Top Quadrant, who has been commissioned by NASA to develop the QUDT ontology and handbook, has sort of successfully produced that massive work and published that a few months ago, and we have invited him to come join us and present that work today. We are also asking potential users of quantities and units of measure ontology standards to join us today to provide their perspectives, I mean, from various domains. Whether they really need such a standard or need another standard for quantities and units of measure, and if so, what do they need and what do they expect? And of course, that dialogue we will have today will help the COMOS team refine requirements and make the case for a cross-domain, international, freely available quantities and units of measure ontology standards. As Pat Hayes and Ed Bachmeyer, myself, and various of the COMOS team people have said, I mean, we don't want to create a standard that sits on the shelf, so let's hear what users would need. Of course, reason why we are so anxious and passionate about this standard is, I mean, if we look back in history, the invention of units of measure and the standardization of such has always been a marker of human civilization. So if we are looking at our civilization going into sort of humans and machine systems, then an ontology seems like a very important standard that needs to be developed. Pat will probably tell us more. So going on to slide number five, the original sort of plan A agenda was that we do an overview, we bring in the metrology people to present their case, we present the NASA QUDT work, we engage user domain standards developers to give us their perspective from engineering and systems design, from smart grid, from financial industry, business ontology, development people, from healthcare, biomedical, bioinformatics, and so on. And of course, we will then have Pat Hayes and Ed Brockmeyer, the two sort of hardcore proponents of the resumption of the Cuomo's work, as discussant to bring in their perspective to make the case for Cuomo's, and then we open up the discussion. That was plan A. And a few things happened that were unfortunate. Besides even the government shutdown, we had the healthcare people running into a conflict that most of them are engaged in, and we couldn't get them in. Mike Bennett, who has agreed to be on the panel, has a family emergency, so he was only able to send the slides that he had already prepared, but could not join us in person. Matthew West was going to present a case from the development of ISO 15926, and he had run into a conflict and was only able to send in his input in writing. So we have plenty of input, less people than we originally thought. So going to slide number six, then this is our plan B. This is exactly what we're going to do. I'm opening the session, then Roth will take 30 minutes to present the NASA QUDT work, and Sean Barker, Steve Ray, and Toby Considine will provide three perspectives from domain users, and then Pat Hayes, since Ed Brockmeyer will not be here, will make the case for Cuomo's, and Pat will probably also kick off our open discussion by maybe reviewing what Matthew West and possibly Mike Bennett had sent in and provide some responses, and then we can all chime in and spend hopefully at least 30 minutes into reviewing. I mean, do we really need a cross-domain international Cuomo standard, and if so, what do we expect, or what should we expect? So, again, these will be the two questions in detail, but it's on your session page already. So, without further ado, let's call on Rob Hodgson. Give us the NASA QUDT ontology and handbook work. Tell us about it. Roth.
Okay, the slide that I have in front of me, and I assume that everyone is looking at these slides, so I will take that as read, is a presentation that was made in May, because I didn't get the time yesterday to do any further work on this presentation, except for some little things I think I added at the end. But had I had that time, I would have been talking about the integration of the UNECE 464 properties in that model, and how to address the need for community-based involvement. Those kinds of slides are slides I don't have, but I shall speak to that near the end. So I'm not going to do 50 slides here. I'm going to start on slide 12 of this deck. We had to introduce what it meant to talk about ontology. Motivational kind of statements had to be made. So I'm moving ahead to slide 12 right now. We don't need to talk about the linked open data world, except to say that QEDT lives in it, and that's an interesting dynamic, the fact that it's out there in the world and people are using it, and I have pressure, my team has pressure to produce release 2, and I'll come on to why that's not happening. Besides the furlough, there are some things to be saying about that. So on slide 12, introductions have already happened by skipping over all the other slides. And now we'll just do a reminder of what it means to talk about quantity, units, dimensions, and data types. The other thing to mention here is there is a treatment of data types. We get into tenses, quaternions, matrices. It's not that we're expecting to have matrix multiplication happening in the RDF world, but we want to represent what an array is and what a vector and a tensor are. Those kinds of things are also in QDT. So I'll speak to the foundational stuff. What it means to talk about ontology, of course, can be a huge topic in itself, but for this purpose, this call, I want to draw attention to the fact that we have over 100 models here, right? And when I talk about a model, I talk about a graph, and I talk about a layered architecture, and I talk about the distinction between a schema graph, a vocabulary graph, a data graph, a mapping graph, a collection graph. There are about 17 kinds of graphs that come together in the RDF world, and some of those are proxy things, some of those are transformational graphs, where rules live. And when we think about ontology, it sometimes neglects this notion that certainly in the RDF world, things are very layered, and graphs overlay schemas, and schemas get extended by having more specific graphs talk at a deeper level. All that stuff goes on. The handbook, the third topic here, is a document of some 4,000, or getting on for 4,000 pages, which is all generated from the ontologies using semantic markup approach, using LaTeX to render all of the mathematics, physics, et cetera, and chemistry even. And this is a substantial piece of work in its own right to publish this. Having NASA mega handbook brings its own challenges, of course, because there's a real attention to quality going on there. And quality takes on two or three different aspects here. One is the grammatical quality, which is currently where the review is at NASA headquarters, and I'm working with my team to respond to that first review. I shall say a little bit more about that later, because it's quite amusing when you generate a document and you have to convert it back to Word so that they can put their review comments in, and every table that's generated, I'm telling you now, in fact, because of the frustration sometimes, every table that needs a change in the header is commented on, despite the fact that the tables are generated from a common piece of software. So there's a level of frustration in dealing with the editorial process. The models themselves, I'll show a little bit of it, and then maybe we'll... The most important thing, I think, for this forum is to talk about how we can govern involvement from others and what it means for standardization to happen, with NASA wanting, of course, to have control over its use of things. The modus operandi of NASA is that it has to be sure of everything it's doing in space. So the governance of things that are relevant for NASA requires some process aspects to be thought through here. NASA is a standards body in a sense, and it's working with NIST. I'll say more about how those dialogues are underway, or stalled, I guess, at the moment. So ending on the priorities is important, and I shall I augment that with some notes that I've been making as the slides I didn't get to do yesterday. So, moving to the next slide, slide 13, we just established some terminology here. A quantity kind is different to a quantity, which is different to a property. These things are fairly well established in the BIM, and the idea of having systems of units and systems of quantities, and the idea of dimensionality is important to all this work. The idea of scaling is coming up quite a bit. I'll come back to that topic. One of the motivations we had, well, going back to 2005, 2007 on this work, with the ability to reason over quantity kinds by being able to say if we have mass and an acceleration and we multiply them, what is the quantity kind we get? So the system can tell us we have a force, yeah? And that kind of reasoning can extend into conversion of units of measure. And one of the big things that's happening, I speak to the last bullet on this slide, that one of the things that's happening in the work is the incorporation of all of ISO 80000. And that was significant effort to take their PDFs and convert all those PDFs into ontologies. And we're talking substantial level of quantities here, something like 800 to 1,000 quantities, and they're now something like 400 or 500 units of measure. Having said that, when we generate the scaling of those units of measure, including kilonewtons and piconewtons, and this is a question for everyone really, how many scalings do we want to make of things? But that's going to significantly increase the number of units. We can think of two orders of magnitude on them to maybe 4,000 or 40,000 units, yeah? If all the scalings are held in that kind of way. Anyhow, moving on to slide 14, we know that what units of measure are. We know what a system is, but not all the systems are as well established. The CGS, MKS, SI, and now ISO systems are fairly well established, but people are actually making their own systems as well, so we have to have some kind of provenance of that. Actually, the provenance ontology is something to mention in passing. We use the provenance ontology to do attribution and derivation kinds of statements. Derived units, coherent units, those things are well understood and modeled appropriately in QEDT. Dimensions are important not only in a expression of the kind you see here in the middle of this slide, but also in the computation that can happen over these models. The work that we're currently finishing, and we're over 50% done, it is to express dimensional vectors mathematically as well as ontologically. This is because some systems want to take a mass expression and work with it. And the other thing that goes on here with the dimensionality is it has to be expressed in the system of units that you're using. So when you talk SI, it takes one form. When you talk in other systems of units, it takes another format. And the motivation of dimensional analysis is mentioned here in the end of this slide. Next slide gives examples of things. We can skip over slide 16 and talk about the handbook a little bit, which is coming up now on slide 18. This is how it looked in April. They didn't like the front page, so it's now looking a little different. Look at the number of pages, 3,800 pages. That's what the review process is going through right now. And I have permission to release the ontologies once I'm through the headquarters editorial review. That might be a kind of being held to ransom on me, but I have permission from NASA to release the ontologies at the point where I've crossed the I's and dotted the T's on all the grammatical stuff. The generation of LaTeX from Sparkle is perhaps of interest to any web form of this. That's another thing to think about. Other people might be interested in MathML and HTML ways of dealing with strange symbols and the like. Yeah? The quantities in units are expressed in several classes, and I think we can skip slide 19 here. And we don't need to remind ourselves what an ontology is on slide 20. Remember, these slides were for a different audience, so 21, we get into what is a triple. And then we talk on slide 22 here about how these models are structured. I will come back to the ontology architecture. When I get to slide 41, we'll be able to speak to that. So I won't dwell on this slide. Again, we want actionable information. We want a schema that can be helping us with interoperability. It can be extended, of course, and reused in various ways. And that is led to requests, actually, for how to make extensions, the guidance that's needed there. I've mentioned machine-based inferencing, so we'll move off this slide now. So we're going to the handbook again, and on slide 26, I'll take you to that slide now. Just have a little drink of water here. The need to publish a handbook in NASA, it was, of course, a little bit of disappointment to our team, in that all of this should be web-based, but we are actually going to have a website with the content of the handbook. The fact that I'm able to generate this means that I can, instead of pointing it to PDF, I can point it to HTML and organize pages, etc., quite readily. So we have this model-based approach to everything, including the generation of this page. And let's move beyond slide 27 here. The audience that we have for this handbook does go beyond NASA's communities to its extended enterprise of integrators and other contractors, of course, but also QDT is in use in life sciences and other places, and I think they'll be wanting the handbook as well in some form. The handbook contents page, this is from May, but it has changed because of the editorial review, but you see here treatment of the conceptual model. The next section after that, it deals with naming, identifier, and design rules. Here we have an ontological representation of all the NIST SP800, which is interesting to show you later. Why did we do that? We wanted the units and the quantities to be self-documenting in terms of their compliance with what we call the NUR rules. The name identifier rules are called NUR colloquially within NASA. So we have that direct referencing going on to the governance rules. Coordinate systems, 22 of those. How do you talk about Earth-centric, Mars-centric, lunar-centric? Geospatial people tend to have two or three of those things going on as well. Scales, systems of quantities separated from the quantities themselves, etc. So we have an example of opening up some of those things. Note the number of there's so many domains under which we can group quantity kinds. One of the issues that this work faces is there is no standard vocabulary for organizing science. The BISAC is one thing I've come across recently in the Dewey Decimal System. Dewey.info has a treatment of science as well. But it's important to have some clear structuring of how you're going to chunk things into domains. And if we were to open these twisties, these headings a bit further, you'd see how hydrodynamics lives underneath mechanics, and this kind of stuff can get argued about a lot among scientists and engineers. So just getting a handle on the information architecture is a reason to be, you know, slow on this kind of work. But we took some input from the ISO work, but even that is not well taxonomically ordered in the view of some of my colleagues. Yeah. So here's an example of a page. I think on slide 31, we see propulsion quantities, and you see orbital angular momentum per unit mass over on the right there. That page, incidentally, shows a little footer there, which is a linked open data idea that every time you have something that's ontologically expressed, it should be renderable in any one of a number of formats. So here we see icons that will give a CSV or a JSON or a triple view of, or an RDF view of things, yeah? XML RDF view of things. The example on the next slide, slide 32, shows electric charge line density. Is a quantity kind. The ontology generated the table with what we had to do. If you look in that little green table there, you see dimensions, you see a symbol, but you also see how a symbol like that is represented in LaTeX with the backslash lambda. You also see how it's represented in the Unicode character. The need in NASA was to allow engineers to have a way in their software of referencing different representations for the various strange symbols that come up. One applicable unit is shown here, and again, the footer there illustrating how from the handbook and ultimately a web page, you can get to different representations of the thing you're looking at there. The rules, I come on to slide 33 now, where I show the different kinds of NER rules. There are grammar rules, naming rules. There are rules that are specifically in place for QDT. There's all the SP811 rules. There's typesetting rules, usage rules, quite a number of things to establish here. On slide 34, one thing before going off slide 33, another thing that's in all of this ontological work is the use of the provenance ontology to reference where everything came from. So the attribution thing you see under sources there points back to the NIST SP811 site. What, just in passing here, one of the editorial changes is that whenever I only have one reference, they want me to say source, colon. Not sources, and we wrote a different conditional treatment of that in the generator, so it knows how to put that out in the right kind of way now. Busy work. So here we see a rule. There is a grammar to the construction of the local name of this. Remember, when you see these headings, you're seeing the local name of a queue name, because everything has a URI, even the rule itself. So it's a rule with that name for mathematical operations. And you see here a repurposing of the SP811 work with full attribution to NIST. Moving on to slide 35, the model-driven traceability that is spoken of here is the ability for the, because of the power of RDF and networking of things, we can see here how electric charge quantity kind is picked up by all the dimension vectors. It's used in the dimension vectors on the right that you see how we've got EMU and Gauss and ISO dimensional treatment of all those electric charge things, and then electric charge units pick that up and systems of quantity kinds pick it up. So a busy page showing that the way used is happening properly in the generation. So alignment with the industry and the various standards work, CO data, if that's how we pronounce that, the BIPM work, the NIST work I've already spoken of, the ISO work, and we already had some work to align with UNECE in the e-commerce area. We haven't aligned with the property staff. We can come on to that topic later. I mentioned that there were 464 properties in the work that was pointed out in a day or two before this call. I went and looked at that at the web, and I brought it in, and I'm wondering how to treat that. Is it SCOS related to kind of thing, or maybe it's I'm very reluctant to say I'll same as, because that has some very interesting semantics. Yeah, so SCOS related to, or something else would be a property to tie things together. The ISO 80,000 models, something like 21 of these have, except for I think the last two or three on the bioinformatics area, may still be making its their way into ontologies, but certainly the bulk of these, the majority of these things are now codified in QUDT. And that was a real headache, yeah, to work all that. This is a labor of love sometimes. We have to talk about that in terms of crowdsourcing this kind of thing. So the handbook, before I get into how the handbook was generated, conceptual model of QDT here depicted in a role model. Object role modeling is something that I kind of like to be more expressive of what's going on in an owl, or an owl-like model, in fact. Yeah. This is generated using TIKZ, T-I-K-Z, which is a LaTeX technology, auto-generated, and then the notes on that. The reason to be in TIKZ is that I can carry connections from this graphic directly into the document, as you see happening with the next slide, slide 40. Now moving on to the information architecture, we see at the, and this is slide 41, for those following by slide numbers. In the bottom of this, we have a number of foundation ontologies, SCOS, provenance ontology, VAIM, which is a vocabulary of essential metadata that lets me describe what a graph is. Is it a vocabulary graph, a schema graph? It lets me describe other things at the on the ontology metadata level. D-type is actually part of QDT, but it's a light thing right now, which lets me talk about enumerations and code lists, and QDT in the center there, quantities and dimensions off above that, and then all kinds of vocabulary going up there to collections, which bring quantity sets together. If I want ISO, SOQ, and SI, SOQ, I have a collection graph that imports those, and they reference all kinds of things below and attach to the foundational ontologies. So when we speak of ontology, are we speaking of the schema in the middle? Are we speaking of the schemas in the next level up, to the left and right? Are we speaking of the vocabularies themselves? There's a whole set of questions on how to architect this that we've worked over several years now, and that's enough on this slide, perhaps. There's the slides here that describe the conceptual model in terms of how the owl rendition of that is, with top-grade composer here showing the various classes and properties, and we see on slide 43 how a unit and a quantity of kind come together, and you see a number of things going on for unit. Much bigger release 2 of QDT than the current published release 1. It's perhaps two orders of magnitude bigger. The handbook was reduced, slide 45 now, by using semantic markdown. By that I mean the ability to put constructs in there that go to a server and do REST calls against the ontologies to pull content, to generate markdown. The markdown then uses Pandoc. Pandoc is a very interesting technology for converting from one format to another, from Berkeley, a guy in, or a team in Berkeley maybe. It's based on Haskell, the functional programming language Haskell, but that's not necessary to know really. It just does a good job if, as a command line tool, yeah. So a LaTeX document is made, and that is a text file, and that generates a PDF document. But the PDF document itself can link back to the ontologies, which you see happening with that big arrow, and I mentioned with that, those little icons at the end of every table. So what does it look like, semantic markdown? Slide 46, here we see LaTeX sections on scales, a label, a UI group saying, give me the DC description of scale type, and that's what you see going on in the start of that document. Some text follows that, and then we have a table. The next UI group here says, I want a LaTeX scales type table from this resource with this caption, and it uses a technology we have called semantic web pages, which can use Sparkle to go over a model to generate either HTML or LaTeX or XML or JSON or whatever you need to happen for transformation. So that's an example of the generator. And the next priorities on slide 48, coming close to the end, I need to do a time check with Peter whether I can refer to my notes. But the editorial review at NASA is almost beyond halfway now. I'm working with my team to do the editorial review, comments, etc. And I'm probably able to say we're at page 200 or 300 right now of the 4,000-page document. But the over half of that document is generated, so the changes won't be that. Hopefully, the changes won't be difficult to work through on the table side of things.
Ross, if you wrap up in 5 minutes, that would be great.
Okay, then the extended review will get into, well, have we expressed what entropy is or what enthalpy is? Have we got molecular weight right? All of this stuff is the extended review still to happen. There's a NIST review. There's a process underway between NASA and NIST on reviewing this. And then in parallel, and soon after the editorial review has been returned to headquarters, I will be able to release with my team the RDF OWL models. There is a QDP community site underway. Because we want to crowdsource this, and because there's adoption going on in life sciences and in other domains, QDT.org has become a nonprofit in order to deal with the growing interest, and that's something else to figure out. But in the remaining 3 minutes or so, I wanted to say that the work ahead that hasn't been mentioned here is to finalize the codes that every unit and every quantity will have. These are numeric or string, actually they're string codes that follow another kind of naming convention so that every unit can carry an identifier. The dimensional vectors are, as I said earlier, over 50% done. Generation of scaled units, I mentioned, that's an easy step. That should we generate all of them? Does it make any sense to have tetra farads, you know, all of that, a peak of farads? We're going to work through that. I talked about the alignment with UNECE. I have many questions there because the URIs aren't very clear. What URI to use is a question for whoever is authoring that stuff. The other major thing is that because the linked open data world is using QDT, they've asked me to stop doing things with hash but do things with slash. I'm going to work that change through. Hashes become slashes. And we shall publish a subset of the 100 graphs, and we'll publish a partial subset of the data types, arrays, etc. Enabling the community is a further step, giving guidance for how I've been asked to, how we should provide guidance for extending QDT. And then the last thing is that I have here is an interest in the concept of value. One of the things that happens with quantified data is that you often want to say in an RDF triple, you know, where you've got subject, predicate, object, and the object typically take on an XSD integer or XSD flow double, etc. Why can't we talk more about the value and make it quantifiable? Is there something going on in the RDF community that would allow us to have support for the concept of value, where we could attach units of measure directly to triples and or to quads, I guess, or whatever form that might take. But the way we can do that currently is to treat a unit as an RDFS data type, but then how do we say something about its representation, if it's a float or a double, etc. And that was my question for everyone, you know, what kind of ways might we have quantified data happening more readily in the web, yeah? I think I should stop, yeah?
Well, thank you very much, Rob. That is just phenomenal. Of course, when we come to the open discussion, we definitely will be coming back to a lot of this. All right, so without further ado, let me bring on Sean Barker to give us some perspectives from the engineering and systems design areas. So if people could bring up Sean's slides, units and measures in engineering. So, Sean?
Okay, good. Right, I'll just very quickly go through the whole of engineering in three slides. If we look at slide two, so we're working through from systems to design to use. I thought I'd just show one of my favorite equations because it's completely crazy. What you'll notice is that there are lots of bits and pieces in there, including powers in watts, antenna gain in decibels, which is a ratio. But you'll notice the next thing is transmitter wavelength in centimeters. We then have target cross-section in square meters, which isn't actually a square meters. It's relative to really a ratio to a nominal 1 meter sphere. But then when we get to the bottom, we've got things like the range, which is historically measured in nautical miles. And you get the question of whether that was an imperial nautical mile or a metric nautical mile, which is about 1.5 meters different. There's some mathematical constants, pi. You've also got Boltzmann's constant. So we're now in then things like receiver noise temperature in degrees Kelvin. So there's a whole mess of units here. And trying to make sure they're consistent used to be quite an interesting practice. The 4 pi cubed actually used to get left out because it turns out that the particular collection of units here tended to cancel out. But trying to get consistency between some of these equations are quite difficult. Now, the problem is that we then want to now move this into system design and something like SysML. Unfortunately, I haven't had time to dig into what SysML does to units of measure. But given its basis in APE 233, which is in turn based on the STEP standard, probably will represent them to some extent. So if we move to slide 3, this is taken out the STEP modular website. And what you can see is it talks about a unit. It's got a name, which is a string. And somewhere in a standard, there was a collection of magic strings. The phrase magic strings is, not entirely appreciative. There are two distinct worlds within the industrial data modeling world at the moment. One is which is concerned with more traditional ways of doing it with these magic strings, fixed collections of strings to select from. and the next is with reference data. Now, if you move to slide 4, we've got here part of the Mimosa EIA data model. And what you can see in the middle is you've got, well, numeric data is related to an engineering type, which is related to a reference type, and that relates itself to a source database. And that's the reference database for this. This actually is an idea from 1596, which is Matthew West's domain, really. When you actually go into this, and one of my problems is interoperability between Mimosa and STEP and BACCESS SNL, what we then start to discover is how do we actually link these things together? Because although, for example, we can use reference data in some of the more modern STEP protocols, it's a different concept of reference data to the one in 1596, or rather it's a different scope of metadata. Oddly enough, PLCS, which is one of the STEP protocols, defines its reference data in OWL, just to be slightly awkward about it. But that gives us hierarchical reference data, which allows us to let users add on extra things. Just slip back to slide 3. One of the places where we use units of measure in bills of materials, and most of those are things like number of parts, but we do actually get a random measures like rolls of tape or drums of filler, or as required for the number of rivets used on the plane. This is a sort of thing we actually have to live with in engineering. And by having hierarchical reference data, we can say that if we, let's say, define a rolls of tape measure, then we can have a BAE rolls of tape simply because we use a different size of roll of tape to Boeing. So the problem we have is essentially is all of these must interoperate. Most of these standards have been developed across a number of different bits of industry, a number of different industries. So, for example, the Mimosa EIA standard that comes basically out of the process control industry derives itself from the oil industry, whereas we're actually now using this in the aerospace and ship industry. And we're trying to work out how do we connect everything which is hidden in a Mimosa database into a STEP reference data library. Oh yes, we want interoperability. I hope that will do for the moment.
Great. Thank you, Sean. So let's bring up Steve Ray's slides and ask Steve to provide us with his perspective.
Okay. All right, this will be rather quick. I just want to give you a perspective from someone who's kind of in the trenches in a couple of different ways with the National Smart Grid, Electrical Grid work going on in the U.S., and give you my observations with respect to how units are being handled. I'm going to speak with a fairly broad brush. I'm sure Toby, who follows me, will have some other perspectives and probably some more detailed perspectives. But I'll just illustrate what my points are, and they're written in the bullets here. Generally, I would say, with a few exceptions, the way a lot of the standards, of which there are hundreds coming up in the smart grid, although a smaller number than those are actually content, if you like, or conceptual standards, generally units are being modeled as strings. You can see that illustrated in the power item type box on the left. This is a UML snippet where it just says item units string. And let me preface all of these remarks by saying the committees I've interacted with are full of really smart people, but I would argue that they're kind of flying without a safety net because they are dependent upon their own wit to make sure that things are consistent without having the luxury of depending upon some kind of model running in the background to make sure the dimensions and the units are all lining up. So as an illustration of that, the bottom little box there, you see quantity kind and units, those are my words, sort of using QUDT language, are sometimes confused. You can see the attributes of this power attributes type, where essentially the frequency is being identified by means of the unit, hertz. So, this one object, two of the properties, one's being identified by its unit and the other one's being identified by its quantity kind. I would argue on this particular class, you should really pick one or the other, at least. You know, if you're going to talk about quantity kind, say frequency and voltage on those two properties. If you want to somehow substitute it by jumping the gun and just naming the units you're going to provide the values in, go ahead and say hertz and volts, or millivolts or whatever. So there's no protection from people doing these little, if you like, semantically typographical errors, I would say. So second bullet on this slide, the relationship among units isn't modeled at all, and therefore you are, it's possible, although I haven't seen a lot of this, but it's only, again, because of the width of the members of the committees, I think, one could, assign a unit of joules for power quantity, as opposed to, joules per second or watts. There's no protection against that if you're not referencing some kind of other good model. So my bottom line comment for my little 5 minutes here is that some kind of officially recognized referenceable standard for all these kinds of things would help a really lot. Now, it's easier said than done because various standards bodies, and we got all of them pretty much represented in the smart grid, IEEE, ISO, ASHRAE, ANSI, et cetera, IEC. They all have sort of different rules about what you can reference inside one of their standards. But so I'll leave it at that high level saying to be, be compatible, obviously, with whatever governing body is the standard in the smart grid, but it would be wonderful if we could start substituting, URIs or something for what we mean by these units in these various classes. So I will leave it at that, and I think Toby might want to expand upon some specific thoughts. I don't know what Toby's going to say.
Thank you, Steve. Toby?
Okay. So all I can say is that Steve was excessively kind when discussing these standards. We spent an untoward amount of time trying to noodle out exactly the kinds of issues that Steve described. A lot of smart grid stuff is kind of linked to the work of the Power Load Management Technical Committee in the IEC, sometimes called TC57, which has its own standard for many of these units, which is not actually conformant with the IEC standards for how the committee should use the units. We're not conformant quite with either, so that just in the standards that out. That Steve's been talking about. We strove to go and reference the NIST-SI units to the extent we could, but that's not really in any format that's machine consumable. So that was a problem to us. And we thought even just weeks spent on arguments for the proper ways to deal with kilo versus mega, something or other, just because there was no referenceable standard to use. We found that the TC57, which we're often referencing, tended to use one-letter acronyms for all the scale factors. But since some of the scale factors are expressed properly as Greek letters rather than Roman letters, they don't work well in XML. So we just found a bunch of mess on that. That'd be a lot cleaner if there was something such as it's being described here today. I was looking at the QUDDT and think, boy, I wish I'd had that, and I wish it had been machine consumable then, because that would have saved me a lot of time. But I don't really talk about smart grids anymore. I really talk about smart energy, because grids are just a small part of the picture. And you have point decisions. I was in a conversation about a year ago talking about a solar panel on a roof that was producing hydrogen as its output. The hydrogen was being stored, and then at a later time could be used to fill a hydrogen car, or it could be used to mix into natural gas, to extend natural gas by, in fact, turbocharging the natural gas. And if it does that, then it's used, that might then be used to generate electricity. So you have this, these multi-phase, if I mix a little pinch of that and a pinch of this, I'm going to get a different amount of energy at the other side of a different form. What's the best idea? In the distributed energy world, you often are faced with decisions such as, do I run a chiller, an electrical chiller, which is more or less what with a heat pump. Do you run a steam chiller, which is a different chemical physical process, but it's run off steam? Do I want a lot of steam, high steam or some electricity, and you spend steam to run chillers? Do I want to, but what if I've got a warm water source on a particular campus? Do I then convert to, so you're always converting from one unit of energy to another to another. And the challenge is not be done. If you have enough engineers on site for enough time, you can do all this stuff today without any of the standards. The problem is if all the new energy technologies are going to scale to be everywhere, to be in people's homes, to be in people's neighborhoods, to be in people's industries, to be in people's factories, people need to have ways to plug new things in and have them self-configured to a certain extent. And then without having the infinite engineers for infinite, billing infinite hours to get the integration done. To do that, we need a generally common semantic form of expressing energy in whatever its form, whatever it's used, and how that energy is going to be consumed, because time is a lot of it. Energy that's here right now is a quite different commodity than energy that will be here in half an hour. And so time gets added into all the units that Steve has on the screen right now in his slides. And we found that everywhere we were set with many, many standards, each of which were slightly different. And so a single standard that was canonical and referenceable and machine consumable would go a long way to reduce the integration load of introducing multiple energy sources, multiple energy consumers, and multiple time series into any structure or building or campus or base. And so, yes, I am very much committed to seeing standards for expression of any of the factors that might be described in the, as using energy or consuming energy or a measure of energy delivery. That's it.
Thank you, Toby. Fantastic. Since Ed Bachmeyer isn't going to be with us, Ed works for NIST, so I will call upon Pat Hayes to give us his perspective. Pat?
Well, I feel a little daunted after listening to all those presentations, I have to say. I don't have a great deal, there's much content to talk about other than kind of why should we be trying to do this. And I prepared these slides last night at very short notice because I didn't realize I would need them. Hence their poor quality. But anyway, we may proceed. So there are four questions. You know, why do a quantum easiness measurement ontology at all? Why make it an ontology as opposed to an old standard? Why use common logic to do it, and why do it now? So I'm going to try these one at a time. I think quantum units of measure, by the way, is a bad title. It should be quantities, measurements, and units. But I think those are the basic ideas. I don't probably need to make this case to this audience, but I think it's a case that I'm making to myself in a way, is that this area, this whole domain, is big enough to be interesting, universally applicable enough to be very important, but sort of self-contained enough to be doable. And in that, it actually stands out amongst all the various ontological domains one can try and tackle. Speaking now as a sort of ontologist here, rather than a person with a problem. In that many domains really are so impossibly big that one has to sort of simplify them or cut them down to size in order to make any progress at all. And this one I think is doable, which would be nice. Now, I've got a little comment there. It avoids well-known tar pits, just coming through time. But given what the previous speaker said, that might not be true. if I understood the point being made back there, which was that, was it that the actual quantities and measurement systems change, themselves change, and we need to evolve with those. We need to keep track of those changes and the evolutions. Because if so, that's not a problem I have to say that I've thought about hard. But it would scare me. Anyway. Next slide. Why do an ontology rather than another standard? And again, the question kind of answers itself. Who needs more standards? But I think the point which has been illustrated already is that there are different views on the basic ideas. The thing we saw in the first presentation, first two presentations, really presume a kind of a physical system of units view of the world in which dimensional analysis is critically important. But there are other points of view. I mean, in medical informatics, certainly, and I've just heard in engineering, one can't stay within that kind of a physics framework. One has to go beyond it. So I think there's a potential utility for a high-level conceptual ontology that tries to deal with the basics that are being common throughout all these different domains and provides a kind of conceptual framework that they can be fitted into. So again, I picked up on Matthew's example of the maximum temperature, which he raised in his email. The point being that the maximum temperature isn't the temperature you hope, because you don't want things to get to that temperature because that would be bad, or, you know, breaking stress is not a stress you ever want to encounter in something, but nevertheless, it's measured in the same way. So what is it? And the answer seems to me, I was interested to hear the abstract concrete distinction in the business ontology. My reaction would be that this is a point on a scale as opposed to an actual measurement value. So like maximum height, I'm thinking of if you go to a fun fair or a boardwalk, the rides tend to have a little height scale next to them, and if your child is under that height, they can't get on the ride. So there's a minimum height gauge. That measures a height, all right, but it doesn't measure the height of a child. It measures a point on a scale in which the point the child's height is compared. So those kind of distinctions can be made very clear in a foundational ontology. So why use common logic to do it? Because that's the current proposal. It's an international standard. It's got a very good. It's a sweet spot for having a clear semantics and having very great freedom of expression. So the concerns that were being mentioned in the Cuomo's talk about the ability, for example, to talk about a triple, which is awkward in RDF. You can do it through reification, but that's ugly as sin. These kind of things are trivial in ISO common logic. You just do it. You know, the semantics works just fine. It's also a lot simpler than the RDF based syntax in OWL. But they can all be mapped into it in a very straightforward way. So on the next slide, I just got a couple of slides I stole from an old presentation describing how CLIF is just an old name for the standard service syntax for common logic. This just shows how to map OWL constructs into common logic. It's very like what's now called the Manchester syntax for OWL. The OWL constructors become functions applied to relations and predicates. So you can build up more complex predicates and then apply them directly. The next slide has got another little comment about common logic syntax. It gets rid of dongles, I call them, which are almost every notation has got, which there isn't. So RDF type is a dongle. Its only role is to connect one thing to another in a certain way. Having to say that, you know, that Pat is an instance of human, or has type human, or human applies to Pat, or Pat is a human. All of these things in red are dongles. Common logic eliminates the dongles, which makes the syntax so much easier and clearer, easier to read and easier to process, and certainly easier to parse. So that's just a little, let me go back a couple of slides to comment logic again. No, that's okay. I've basically said all that. Now, the downside of using comment logic, I have to confess, is that there isn't the existing sort of penumbra of tools available, software tools available for processing with it. And you certainly couldn't do the very impressive, I have to say, ingenious putting together of scripts that will manipulate ontologies and get you LaTeX and so forth that we saw in the first talk using common logic notation, at least not without doing quite a bit of extra programming. So I see this as a sort of human-oriented initial language that's much easier to get clear and can be, if necessary, embedded into more machine-oriented systems later to do that kind of work. So why do it now? My penultimate slide, why not? But it seems to be, as I said, the sort of highest value comparing payoff and cost of doing it and the utility of doing it. And frankly, I've been trying to get started working on this for some time now, or get this project kicked off the ground. Well, Peter's been doing it, and I've been sort of hanging in there. And I'd like to get it done before I die. I'm already retired, so I've only got so much time. The last slide is a few sketches of some of the higher distinctions that I would want to put into the upper ontology. In particular, it would start off with early on, it would have the Stevens classification of types of scale, ordinal interval ratio scales, for example, and their properties. So before you even get to talking about units and systems of units, there's quite a lot of stuff conceptually higher than that need to be gotten clear. By the way, I forgot to put on this slide, but I meant to put it on it. The concept of a system of units, the actual system, would be an individual entity in this ontology, and we would talk about a unit or belonging to a system and be able to refer to alternative systems of units and how they map or how they related to one another. Okay, that's very sketchy, sort of making the case talk, end of talk.
Thank you very much, Pat. So let's open it to all the participants. Michael Kuninger.
Okay, thanks, Peter. I just thought I'd make some kind of overall comments at this point. Might be a good time. So I just want to make a few comments as president of the International Association of Ontology and Its Applications. There are two groups within the association that are particularly relevant to what's being discussed today, and I want to just point these out and drum up some interest for future work. One is that there is a special interest group called Ontology-Based Standards within the association. And so I would encourage everyone who's really interested in these topics, not only today, but in the future sessions, to join the association and get involved with this SIG, the special interest group. It can serve as a great way to coordinate a lot of the different efforts and become aware of all the different efforts that are going on, the ones that we're listening to today and in this upcoming mini-series, as well as earlier mini-series that we've had, just a little piece of what's happening. And so we can start kind of working on that. In addition, there is a technical committee called Ontology Registries and Repositories. And so, again, I'd really encourage everyone who's working on ontologies, particularly the ontologies we're hearing today, and there's also some that are on the other resources link in today's session in particular, to upload the ontologies to one of the repositories that are being used within the association, and also in coordination with the OOR, the Open Ontology Repository Initiative. So in particular, there's one being developed by the University of Bremen in Germany called Ontohub. There's also CALORE, the Common Logic Ontology Repository, so this should be relevant to some of Pat's comments. And there's also another ontology related standard that is being submitted as a request for a proposal within OMG called OntoIOP. And that also, that allows, or is intended to allow people to compare different acclimatizations of ontologies, even in different languages. And I think a lot of the things that we're looking at here today might be a great case study for those, particularly, you know, the fact that QUGT is in, you know, one of the OWL profiles formerly known as OWL Lite. And then you compare that to some of the homologic work that Pat was mentioning to really determine, like, how are these, you can even have the same ontology, but different versions written in different languages. And so this is one of the things that the OntoIOP project is trying to support, as well as a question that Tara raised earlier, kind of related to the modularization of these ontologies. So I think her question was, you know, how could I extract from QUDT just a subset of axioms that are needed for a particular application? And I think there's a lot of work that could be done in say, modularizing ontologies such as QUDT within using, say, one of the existing repositories within the Open Ontology Repository Initiative and also facilitated by the IAOA. So, yeah, that's just a few words that I wanted to say at this point. And I have some other more specific questions, but I'll wait till later to ask some more specific questions in the rest of the discussion. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Michael. Tara is up next. Tara?
Okay. Well, Michael already mentioned one of my comments about modularization, so I won't repeat that.
Sorry.
No problem. Getting more to the main issues, the point of these scales in terms, this is Tara, in terms of these Stevens scales, it's pretty well recognized in the metrology literature that those scales are not exhaustive or even, you know, a perfectly consistent system. And so this is the clear case when you need to get someone who is a specialist in metrology involved in this. I don't think there is a consensus in the metrology field as to what is the perfect system of these scales, but you can, there are certain cases that you can point out to show the lack, such as the example of when you want to express a unit of temperature change, and the classic example of this is in climate change, where we talk about predictions are going to the global average temperature will increase by 1 degrees Celsius. If you want to convert that to Fahrenheit to try to capture the attention of some of the idiots in the U.S. who deny the existence of climate change, for example, you don't use interval scale. You do not multiply by 9 over 5 and add 32. You just multiply by 9 over 5 because it is a difference. So here's a single unit, degrees Celsius, that is used for completely different kinds of quantities. And if you use the standard conversion that we know of to convert between Celsius and Fahrenheit, you'll get a very wrong answer. So it's those kinds of issues in identifying these types of scales where it can get quite complex. And that's all I wanted to say.
I would love to
for you to send me pointers to that literature, by the way.
Yes, I'll do that, Pat.
Thank you.
John McClure, you're next.
I just wanted to reemphasize what Pat Hayes had to say. I think it really gets to the heart of issues. We really need to have, as part of this effort, a set of super properties, if you will, that establish the relationship between a given measurement and the attributed item. as examples, and he has mentioned a few, maximum, minimum, mode, capacities, I mean, things of this nature that show and guide the use of these measurements in the real world. I don't see how this work can possibly be considered complete without it, and maybe someone can explain that, but that's really the only comment I had.
Thank you, John. Anyone wants to take on John's question or comment? Ralph, go ahead, Ralph.
So the topic of distinguishing between what is a measurement and what is a quantity and what is a property and what is a quantity kind is something that is in the NASA work that was done for the Constellation program. It's making its way into QEDT. The way that those distinctions were made, I often use the example of velocity, the speed of a car. The car has a property of being at a certain speed. Speed is its property, but the quantity kind is velocity, and the units might be, you know, kilometers per hour or miles per hour, etc. So distinguishing measurement is also something that needs, and we found this particularly in space systems, that you also have to understand, and in fact it's there in some of the other work that I've seen out there. It's the idea of being able to speak to the conditions under which a measurement happened. So what was the pressure? What was the temperature? We see it actually embodied in BTU things, yeah, where it's one atmosphere or whatever, yeah. So there's a need to augment any model with these considerations, and we've done it, and it might be release 2.5 of QEDT where that work makes its way out, yeah. Uncertainty is the other thing that is important in all of this, again, that can require conditions under which a value is being measured. Yeah. Okay, that's my. I just motivated by that little piece of conversation that happened. Yeah, that's important to distinguish these things. Yeah.
Thanks, Ralph. Toby, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so as I hear this, I think I heard this question. I was thinking of the open research initiatives that are out there of attempts to get more and more of the raw scientific observations, particularly scientifically funded, you know, publicly funded scientific research out there, getting people's data books out on the web where someone can consume them and use them and do all kinds of things with them. What kind of research could you come up with that? Using the techniques that we now use for advertising, but instead on scientific experiments and data collection, it's hard to imagine. But a precursor for all of that would probably be solving this problem so that the open research effort has a common data model to work with.
Thanks, Toby. Pat?
I mean, I just want to sort of make a little speech, I suppose, about the business of trying to do very high-level ontologies. It's very tricky because, you collect together as many cases, as many things as you can. But whatever you do, there's going to be somebody somewhere who's got something they want to do with your ontology that you haven't thought of. And then something isn't going to quite fit their case. So at some point you have to just say, well, it's done, you know, and it is what it is. Or you have to sort of declare that it's a forever ongoing project and it will eventually get pushed off into such a high level of generalization and abstraction that it will become basically pure mathematics. So I don't know. It's just a methodological kind of issue of the whole game of doing very high level ontologies. One hopes one gets to a point where the generalization is wide enough to be useful to a large number of people, but not so content-free that it ceases to say anything, and sort of stay there. I think there is such an area for this domain, and that it's a little higher than where the NASA project is right now. which is, you know, dauntingly impressive, I have to say. After listening to that first presentation, I wanted to just crawl away into a hole. Anyway.
So, Pat, so what's this kind of the state of things right now with the, I guess yours is the Cuomo's effort, right?
Yeah.
So what's the state of things right now?
Well, ask Peter. It's basically in suspension, I believe.
It is. Unfortunately, it's in suspension, and a few of us are trying very hard to get the work resumed. There's a strong tendency to resume and build upon what Ralph has done. But then one other thing that we're really concerned is the buy-in from the metrology people who are stewards of measurements, I mean the real measurements, the block of chunk of platinum and so on. This session is important in that it will help us get grounded and know exactly if we resume what would or should we be building.
Right, and then is Cuomo's officially part of OASIS, or?
It has been for okay. quite a while. It is an OASIS TC.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that then. So, because there might be some resources I could, in terms of students who could be contributing to something, or at least maybe help get some new energy in.
Fantastic. Is Toronto an OASIS member?
I don't know. I'll have to check on that.
Yeah, please. I mean, if you are, send some resources over. I mean, we are hoping to restart that technical committee imminently.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks. John?
I'm just... difficult for me to detect that there is consensus that we need to have this sort of investigation of what the relations that these quantities can have to the attributed resources. So what I'd like to propose, you know, is some sort of exit criteria for a acceptance of a given standard that might include not only that kind of information, but to couch it in a presentation of, let's say, using a data cube ontology to transmit, exchange information in an LOD fashion, between organizations, if you will. So I'm curious what the thoughts are as far as establishing exit criteria in general and in particular, the LOD data cube ontology used as the transport mechanism of this stream of data. Hope that's clear.
Anyone wants to take that on?
Do I? Oh, I think it's very important to in a presentation of a standard to show specifically how it, in non-normative fashion, to speak specifically about how the standard is used in the real world. And lo and behold, I think we'll find that the non-normative becomes the common practice for exchanging data between points. So, I believe very strongly in working prototypes. I mean, that was kind of the basis, I think, of the W3C recommendation process and that sort of thing. So Pat knows much more about that than I.
Great. And I hope you can look over what the OASIS TC has established as its charter, and if it falls within what you hope to see, then join us and contribute. It's a community effort, so I mean, whenever people chime in and contribute, I mean, it gets done, and when they don't, chances are they might fall through the cracks. Thanks, John. I am very happy. Oh, I hope we haven't lost him. I was really glad to see Alan Rector among us, but he's now is no longer in the chat room. So I was hoping he would make a couple of comments with respect to perspective from the healthcare, medical, informatics, bioinformatics area. But a couple of people have brought up UCOM. I actually did try to bring in a few people from that general area. We had, I mean, if you notice in the regrets, we had Christopher Schutt, Stan Huff, whose work actually led to UCOM, and Harold Sobrick, and so on. And none of us actually were able to join us because of conflicts, as much as they would have wanted to. So, for those who want to or have a point to make about UCOM, since UCOM is fairly well established in that area and maybe less so in terms of being logically represented, any view from that community is highly welcome here. Anyone? Who is it? Simon Cox.
Good. I raised UCOM in the discussion. UCOM takes a purely sort of compositional approach to units of measure, and so it only enumerates the primitives. And this is probably the biggest weakness I see with the approaches discussed today, particularly QUDT. I like QUDT a lot, but the biggest weakness I see is that it is required to enumerate explicitly the units of measure. So you get hundreds or thousands of these as explicit items in the ontology. Whereas UCOM simply provides a rule for building units of measure. However, I think it could be argued that the use cases are somewhat different, because I think UCOM is only concerned with unit conversion and is not concerned with the considerations of what is called quantity kind in QUDT. So it doesn't have an associated quantity kind ontology or vocabulary. It only deals with the units of measure. The quantity kind is implied by the dimensionality of the units of measure. If to the extent that dimensionality is a description of quantity kind, which we know it isn't, because it doesn't have enough semantics. But I suppose my concern is that UCOM is probably the best worked out example of saying, here's a grammar for constructing an arbitrary unit of measure given a set of primitives, and that includes the powers of 10 multipliers, but which gets over this problem which Ralph referred to of the labor of love and such like, and assimilating all of the existing units vocabularies into QUDT, which would be a completely never-ending project, I think.
Thank you very much, Simon. I hope you can look over what POMOS is set out to do and hopefully join us. I mean, in preparation of this session, I actually had a small exchange with Graham Grieve through the introduction by Harold Sobrick. And unfortunately, Graham thinks it's too late to join us. I know it's awful hour in Australia now, and I especially thank you for joining us. I assume you're calling in from Australia. Okay, thank you. All right, last chance to make a comment. If not, then allow me to thank everyone for coming in and joining us and making all the contribution, especially salutes to Ralph Hodgson and your team in this really impressive NASA QUDT ontology and handbook work. And thanks to Sean Barker, Steve Ray, Toby Considine, Mike Bennett, Matthew West for sending in their domain perspective. I also would like to thank Paul Grant and John McClure for having sent in their comments, which I have put added to the linked to from the session page under additional community input. And of course, thanks to Pat for summing up the Cuomo's position. Looks like there's a real need, and there are obviously standardization issues that needs to be addressed, and particularly our ability to seriously engage the metrology people is still outstanding. So this is not the end, but hopefully a sort of restart of a process that would bring us the really, if you ask me, really badly needed cross-domain, international, freely available quantity and units of measure ontology standard. And on that note, I have one more announcement, and that is next week, Gary Brooke-Cross and Tara Edlin will be chairing the next ontology-based standards mini-theory session. That would be session number 5. It's ontology-based standards in the geospatial domains. I just posted a link to the development session page. It's the same time next Thursday. So I look forward to having everyone here again. So thanks, everyone, and goodbye.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Bye-bye.